You are Locked On Bucks, your daily podcast on the Milwaukee Bucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Backs him down. Giannis into the lane. Giannis spinning.
Welcome to Locked On Bucks. It is our free agent extravaganza, but really, I mean, I don't know if it's that much of an extravaganza because the Bucks don't have a lot of cap space, but that's okay. I have two guests here that will explain all of that to you in a little bit. For now, I'm Eric Name, Milwaukee Bucks reporter at ESPN Milwaukee, also the Milwaukee Bucks reporter at ESPN Vernon, which is a small town between Muskego and Maguanago off of 43. I had no idea that it existed until one of our listeners said I should check out ESPN Vernon, so I'm more than happy to do so. Be sure to keep sending those in so we can attempt to figure out where all of you are across the state of Wisconsin, and if you're not in Wisconsin, send it in too, because one of our guests today... Actually, both of our guests today, not in Wisconsin currently. Frank Madden, the founder of Brew Hoop. Frank, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I am to blame for us not doing this last night. So a lot of good people were denied a podcast today because I was traveling, and then I found out I could go home a day early. And, you know, when you get a chance to go home a day early and see your five-month-old daughter, you know, as much as I cherish the time I can spend with Dean Moniat on the phone, I prioritize my daughter just a little bit more, Dean. I hope you're okay with that. But I'm obviously glad that we're able to make it up today.
Our second
you're a disgusting person.
Our second guest today, the man you just heard call Frank a disgusting person, is our good friend Dean Moniat. You can follow him on Twitter at AllTheBucks. You can read him at BrewHoop as well. Dean, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing perfectly well. I'm so happy that I get to talk about the Bucks again. I'm starving. Fan, whatever you want to call me, analyst, whatever, who demands that we speak for at least 4 hours now.
Okay, we'll see if we can get that full 4 hours in. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but we'll see if we can do it. Like I laid out a little bit on Wednesday, essentially what we're going to try to do here is preview free agency for you, and I think the easiest way to get this all going is to look at the Bucks' current cap situation, and there is no one better in the entire world to do this for us than Frank. Frank, can you kind of, I guess the things people need to know about this summer is just kind of where the Bucks currently stand on the cap, and then what things, and by things I mean what players opting in, opting out, getting an option, not getting an option, all those things, how those players can affect the cap space that the Bucks will have to work with during free agency.
Yeah, and so I think people probably have heard us talk a lot about, you know, the threat of the luxury tax and the challenges of, you know, Jabari Parker and how much you pay him and what that means just for the Bucks flexibility in general. And so I think kind of, I guess, just like to kind of set expectations, and we won't know the official NBA salary cap and luxury tax numbers until July. So we don't know that right now. But the projection is that the cap will be around $101 million. And the projection is that the luxury tax will likely be maybe $123-ish. And obviously that those are kind of subject to change depending on kind of the NBA's final accounting rules. But, you know, again, for reference, this past year, the tax was at $119.3 million, and the salary cap was at just a tick over $99 million. So pretty modest increases there, but current projections say that the cap is expected to rise to $108 next year. I think I've seen the tax threshold projection go to like $131. So, you know, you probably will hear us reference 2019 and cap space there. The cap is, you know, going to get a decent bump next year relative to the last couple of years where the increases were maybe more modest than expected. And certainly the Bucks are a team that could use some more breathing room against both the tax and cap, because as we kind of like break down, you know, where they are now, you know, there's not a ton of like moving parts to the Bucks cap. You know, really the big thing is Jabari's cap hold, which, you know, people may have heard us reference at being $20.3 million. And that's purely just a multiplier of his salary last year. So there's nothing magical about that number. It's literally just a formula as to why it is $20 million. I think at this point we would certainly expect Jabari Parker probably will not be paid $20 million next year.
To be clear, this is totally just a filler for these purposes, like to create a thing that is called a cap hold. Like, this does not mean the Bucks have to pay him 20.3. That does not mean if he accepts a qualifying offer, he'll get 20.3. Like, it doesn't mean anything other than the number that was invented for salary cap issues to create a cap hold for Jabari Parker. Correct?
Right. I mean, right. This is like the cap holds are basically the way that teams are prevented from, you know, essentially just being able to completely blow through the cap number with exceptions. So basically it's like if you have a player, in this case a restricted free agent, there's a couple pieces. You have to make him a qualifying offer, which is generally a much lower number than the cap hold. And for Jabari, because he didn't start 41 games or play 2,000 minutes last year, his is actually about half of what it previously would have been. It's around 4.3 million. So that's the number that this week they have to offer him as a one-year contract in order to basically retain matching rights and to, you know, retain his restricted free agent rights. And that's, you know, again, if they don't offer him the 4.3 million, then, and he's just, you know, then he's an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, at that point, Jabari Parker presumably is long gone. And you wouldn't presumably have to worry about any cap holds at that point because he's gone. But in the meantime, he does count for $20 million. As long as the Bucks are interested in retaining him, because they don't have cap space, they'll need to keep his hold on the books. And again, it's around $20 million. And the upshot of that is that if you look at kind of the total cap number for the Bucks right now, and that's including 13 players. Including Jabari, his cap hold, as well as Tyler Zeller, who's got a non-guaranteed $1.9 million, as well as Malcolm Brogdon, who's got a non-guaranteed $1.5 million, as well as Dante DiVincenzo, whose first-year salary will be around $2.5 million. All those guys add up to a little over $124 million. So the first thing you'll notice is, that number is above the luxury tax threshold that we're projecting for this next year. And that's why, obviously, if the Bucks were to retain Jabari Parker, it is pretty important that they get him for a lower number than his cap hold. Now, some important caveats to this. Obviously, Tyler Zeller is non-guaranteed. So, you know, one of the key tools that they have if they are in a position where they are trying to avoid the luxury tax or just generally trying to shed salary, or if they're trying to make a trade, non-guaranteed salaries are always more attractive. Tyler Zeller has some flexibility there. So you could wipe off Tyler Zeller, take off that, you know, roughly $2 million, and that drops you down to a little over $122 million, right? And bear in mind, as we've talked about last year, the luxury tax is not assessed in the summer. It's not assessed at the beginning of the season. It's not assessed at the end of the season. It's assessed at the end of the season. So teams have a lot of time to get under the tax if they are over the tax during the summer. So that's kind of an important kind of thing to keep in mind. There are kind of some important assumptions around that, especially because whether you're above the tax or in particular above what's called the apron, which is $6 million over the luxury tax. So the apron is about $129 million, let's say, this year. That has an impact on whether you have access to the full tax, the non-tax mid-level exception, which will be close to $9 million a year, or the taxpayer mid-level, which would be a little over $5 million a year. So, you know, and this is kind of the interesting thing, and Dean kind of pointed this out to me earlier. I don't know how far we'll get into the nitty-gritty details, but there's some issues that arise if you have Jabari on the cap and you've got all this money on the cap and you try to go out and sign somebody using the full non-tax mid-level, because again, you can't go over $129 million in terms of like signed contracts and cap holds and all that other stuff. So it's a bit tricky, at least from kind of the quick math that we've been doing. But again, there's two big variables. Jabari Parker is not going to get $20 million. I feel pretty confident that if he does, he's not going to be playing for the Milwaukee Bucks next year.
Agreed.
And the other big piece that right now it's on the Bucks cap sheet, but in November it will most likely not be on the Bucks cap sheet, is Mirza Teletovic's stretched $3.5 million. And so this is one of these things that for Bucks kind of tax planning purposes, I'm guessing they are going to assume that he will be wiped off their cap due to the medical retirement issue in November, which is a year after he was first injured with, of course, the blood clots that you know, unfortunately, obviously, likely ended his career. But for now, that does count against the Bucks cap. So in terms of like summer flexibility and things like that, it matters, even though this fall, you know, presumably it'll go away. So if you kind of just do some quick math, kind of, I guess, sort of ticking it down. So I said 122.1 if you wipe out Zeller. You wipe out Jabari and you say, you know, Jabari walks or something in that sort of scenario, then you're down to about $102 million. So again, then you have a lot of breathing room against the luxury tax, but you also have basically no way to kind of spend a lot of money, but you could use that full non-taxpayer mid-level exception at that point easily and still be well under the luxury tax. You'd be at, you know, whatever, 110 or something on that order. So so those are probably the key variables. You know, Brogdon obviously is not going to be waived, right? Brogdon's going to be locked in at $1.54 million. You know, DiVincenzo is what he is. I think, you know, and Dean and I were also talking. Dean mentioned, you know, said if once DiVincenzo signs, he can't be traded for 30 days. So officially, not that I'm expecting DiVincenzo to be traded this summer, but, you know, a lot of times there's some strategy if you do expect to make some trades early in July, don't sign your rookie first rounders. Although, let's be honest, the flip side of that is, you can always just officially make the trade. You can make the trade official 30 days later, right? It's not like, you know, there's some game to be played in August that you have to be ready for. So, so let me hit the pause button there. Dean, Eric, keep me honest. What have I missed anything? Any other kind of scenarios that you guys would want to talk about? I haven't even gotten into kind of 2019 yet, but, you know, hopefully people have gotten a sense of just sort of the general state of the Bucks cap at this point.
I believe you've done so willfully, but you did not mention Brandon Jennings.
That's right. He isn't even on my cap sheet, so I totally forgot about
him. Dean, you wanted to talk about Brandon Jennings and why he might be important. Go for it.
Okay, so I want to clarify something that Frank said, and I believed it to be true like a couple of weeks ago, and then I learned of the new CBA that was signed last year. There's this provision that states that a non-guaranteed contracts cannot be used in trades anymore. I mean, if they can be used, but they don't count as any side sending or receiving any money. So essentially, if you don't guarantee a deal before you trade it, it doesn't matter if it's included for, you know, salary matching purposes.
So, in this example, you'd be talking about Tyler Zeller, right? Like, if you would not guarantee Tyler Zeller and then decided to include him in a trade, even though he's on the books for 1.9, I believe it is, that 1.9 won't actually count, correct?
Yeah, it's not going to count at all in the trade.
Okay, continue.
Okay, that's the first thing I want to say. I think that everything that Frank said is correct. I think that Jennings, the Bucks were to, you know, guarantee his contract and the deadline is on the 1st of July, it could signify that they're looking to trade him. I don't believe that anyone in the box would, you know, willfully accept Jennings back on the team next year. I mean, it would have to be something crazy. I mean, they already have, like, four guards guaranteed. And I don't think that Brandon Jennings has shown anything that would warrant him, you know, coming back as a backup point guard. So I would be looking out for that. I would also be looking out, like you said, Eric, that whether DiVincenzo signs in the next few days or they're going to, you know, delay that. Similarly to Sterling Brown last year, well, it was for a different reason, but you remember how it was. And, you know, there was this rumor that you had him locked in your basement, if you remember that.
I do remember that. And I remember who started that rumor.
I think it was Frank. So, I mean, it's another thing to look for. I believe that if any of the non-guaranteed contracts, which means Zeller or Jennings, because I think that Mohamed's deal includes an old trade clause, if I remember correctly. So I doubt that they're going to be, you know, resigning him. If any of those contracts gets guaranteed, I would be looking out for any potential trades that the Bucks might be, you know, setting up before July 1st. And I hope that I'm going to be right if something like that happens.
And I was going to say, the important thing there is and Frank and Dean and I were talking about this before the podcast started, but if the Bucks do guarantee any of those contracts, the deal better already be set up, aside from Tyler Zeller. Like, Tyler Zeller, is, I think, is a fine rotation player, and he can actually contribute at an NBA level. But any, like, if they were to guarantee Jennings' deal, like, you better have the deal set up and ready to go, because you look at this roster, and I just don't really see any opportunity for point guards to get some more run. Like, we think about Eric Bledsoe as a point guard, Matthew Dellavedova clearly a point guard, then Malcolm Brogdon plays some point guard. Apparently Dante DiVincenzo can play a little point guard, or at least they envision him playing some point guard.
It's June, so every 6'4 guard can play point guard.
Fine, but those first three all legitimately do play point guard. Whether or not Dante DiVincenzo does is a different story, but there is no room for more point guards on this roster, and it just would not be a good use of any assets or money that you might have. So if we see any of those get guaranteed, I would sure hope that the Bucks already know what the deal is that they're making to make that happen. So I'm trying to think. I think that's about it through just for their current cap situation. I was just going to say, with Jabari, important things to note that his cap hold will remain his cap hold until he signs a new deal. So the Bucks are likely going to extend him the qualifying offer here by the end of the week. Deadline on that is Friday at midnight. We're recording Thursday at 3:53 Central. So they're probably going to do that. Even though his qualifying offer is 4.3, I think, his cap hold will still be that $20 million figure that Frank had talked about before. So there are two numbers to think about, but the qualifying offer is what gives the Bucks the rights to match going forward. So qualifying offer is different than the cap hold, but the cap hold is the number that is reflected on the cap and will affect how the Bucks can make moves. So I think what's important here with all of that, essentially, and again, you know, maybe it goes way differently than this, and the Bucks signed Jabari Parker at 12:01 on July 1st. I don't foresee that happening, but maybe it does. But I guess the takeaway from all of this is expect the Bucks to be pretty quiet for the first 8 or 9 days of free agency. Just because you'll have to get to, once the moratorium is officially over, then you'll have to get through 48 hours with Jabari Parker if someone signs him to an offer sheet, which gets you to July 9th. And then, you know, maybe there is some resolution, but also maybe there isn't. But no matter what, like, I'm trying to think in my head of a scenario in which the Bucks make a move on July 1st, and I'm struggling to think of one. Unless it's a trade, like, I don't think there's anyone to sign at 12:01 on July 1st. Frank, you see that any differently?
Let me hit pause here for a moment. I'm just looking through CBA FAQ. So they use this. I'm just going to read this. This is question 13, because I think this invalidates something we were talking about earlier. So for team salary calculations, they use a slightly different calculation for terming team salary in relation to the apron. This applies to the biannual non-taxpayer mid-level and taxpayer mid-level exceptions and for sign and trades. For these purposes, they use the team salaries defined above with following modifications. Cap holds for free agents are excluded. For rookie, for teams restricted free agents, the amount of any outstanding qualifying offer or first refusal exercise notice, both including unlikely bonuses, whichever is greater, are included. So I don't think actually Jabari's cap hold actually does create any issues for using the full mid-level.
Wow.
Does that make sense to you guys?
Oh, that's actually very interesting.
That is a huge deal for the Milwaukee Bucks. I shouldn't say huge deal, because it's still only the mid-level exception. But yeah, they can do the full MLE from your reading of that rule. So
do you want me to just redo my whole cap thing?
Nope.
Like, is it?
I don't.
No, it's fine.
I do not. Like, we just have this correction right here, and it makes total sense. And everything you just said is staying in. This was a revision to the podcast, because
this is how the sausage is made, right? Just a lot of CBAFAQ.com reading and then rereading and then checking other things and all that other stuff.
So the moral of the story here is the Bucks will have the full MLE to use. They can use that really at any time. But at the same time, I don't know if I think my point still stands. Like, I don't know that anybody is, unless they're truly, truly unqualified for the mid-level exception. I doubt many free agents are sitting there on July 1st and saying, yes, full MLE, I'll take it. I think people tend to dream a little bit bigger. Whether or not that's a good decision, we can talk about here a little bit as we go through free agency and kind of some of the things that might happen. But I would still say that it'll probably be pretty quiet on the Bucks front here for the first couple of days.
It would probably be, yeah, I would say it would be a bad sign if the Bucks, you know, announced that on day one they're signing some dude to like a full MLE deal, because the only people probably taking full MLE deals on day one are guys who you do not want to be signing the full MLE deals, especially for multiple years. I think even though the Bucks would have the ability to do so, and obviously they would still sort of have to then on the back end figure out how they manage to obviously, if they want to keep Jabari Parker or sign and trade Jabari Parker, they would have to figure out a way to make sure that, you know, they don't fall afoul of some of the rules, right? Like, you can't sign somebody for the full mid-level and then, you know, oh, actually, we're going to go above the apron now, right? Go above 129. You can't do that. So I think it is important that, you know, again, that they kind of be a bit strategic about how they use that. But as you said, you're not getting a good player on day one with the mid-level anyway, right? I think there's probably going to be a lot of people settling for like 1+1s or 1-year mid-level deals this year, just because, again, everybody knows there's a ton more value. There's a ton more cap space. I think our friends at the Dunked On Pod were saying, you know, next year there's, I think, close to $600 million in projected cap space versus this year, like less than half that. So, you know, if you are a free agent, you're trying to switch teams, obviously, if you're staying with your current team, you have bird rights, you can sign for whatever. The cap space isn't necessarily a matter as much. But, you know, when there's cap space, it tends to drive valuations up. That impacts, obviously, the people who are free agents signing with other teams. They get a lot more money. And it also impacts, you know, teams signing with their own teams, because if the market is higher and there's more options for players, they tend to get more money from their own teams as well. I hesitate to say anything about what I expect the Bucks will and won't do. I'm sure they might be connected with people early in free agency, because pretty much every team is. But as far as making a deal, it will be interesting to see if they do anything really of substance before figuring out what to do with Jabari Parker.
All right. Full mid-level this year is what, 8.2? Do I have that right?
I think it's more than that, isn't it?
Close to 8.56.
Yeah.
Okay, so full mid-level is 8.56, so I probably should have had us kind of break this out a little bit earlier and let you know exactly what these actual numbers are, but that is helpful. So about 8.6 for the full mid-level exception this year. And again, the reason why I would say you don't really want to be signing someone to the full mid-level that day on July 1st is 8.6 is a part of that dead zone that we talk about all the time, where you don't really want to have guys at that level. Again, that isn't necessarily Matthew Dellavedova level, that isn't John Henson level, that isn't Tony Snell level, but it is an awkward spot, and it is a number that, you know, maybe this year it's great that you could have that guy, but going forward, that just clogs up your cap and gives you more of those middling contracts that make all of this, I think it makes all of it extremely difficult when you are looking to find big money for players that you truly, truly want to keep, like, say, Chris Middleton next year. A guy like that, where you're really going to want to have a couple extra $1 million. So signing a guy for a full 8.6 for the next 3 years or whatever it may be, like, just might not be the best idea. So, all right, let's kind of go through some different scenarios because I think that's kind of what we'll have to do. Let's say the Milwaukee Bucks sign Jabari Parker. And they signed Jabari Parker, let's go with 3 for $45.
What? Do I have to do that?
Yes, you have to do that. 3 for $45. Frank, what would that look like for the Milwaukee Bucks? That essentially locks them out for the rest of free agency, right?
Well, again, so the key thing is, like, where, you know, where a deal starts, like a declining deal versus an ascending deal actually kind of matters a lot, especially in a range like that. You know, if you're replacing, you know, a deal that, you know, a cap hold that is otherwise 20.3 million with 13 million, then that pushes your cap number to right about 115, including kind of everything we've discussed so far, excluding Zeller. And so actually you'd have maybe not the completely full MLE to work with at that point, but you would potentially have the ability to still use most of the mid level, even if you signed Jabari Parker, or if you signed and traded Jabari Parker for players making something on the order of probably closer to 12 million would give you the full license to use the full mid level and still stay under the tax.
So 3 for 36 ish.
Yeah, I mean, it can be more, right? If you're having max raises in there, so if you're for a deal starting at $12 million, the annual raises could max out at a little under $1 million a year. So, so if you did 3 years, you could do $39 million, I guess, roughly. Okay. So yeah, that gives you, I guess, some idea of how that would impact salary. But yeah, and I think Bobby Marks when a couple months ago did point out as he was doing a preview, he said something, it was like 12 point something million. If the Bucks got Parker back for 12 point something million, then they'd still have the flexibility to use their full mid-level. So that's an interesting number, an interesting sort of number that tips your whole salary structure into more towards the tax if you do use them full mid-level. And keep in mind too, I mean, the full mid-level can be split among multiple players. You don't have to use it all in one player. So, you can sign a guy for $5 million using the full mid-level. You can sign a guy for, $2 million or $7 million, right? But there is obviously more flexibility if you can use the whole thing below the tax. And I think that's an important – that's, I think it's a good number to pick just because it sort of illustrates that's probably the most that you can have either Jabari Parker or somebody you sign and trade him for and still like be in the clear at least this summer to stay under the tax. Now, there's still a lot of other things you could do. And the main thing is, I'm still including Teletovic in the team salary. But if you wipe off Teletovic, then you're closer to 111 with Jabari slotting in at like, even if I put him in at 13. So that's obviously, by November, you would project to be actually in pretty, relatively speaking, in pretty decent shape as far as the tax goes. You could even keep Tyler Zeller at that point and presumably still be under the luxury tax if Teletovic is wiped off the books and you got Parker for, 12 or 13 million bucks a year.
And I guess what's interesting here is I just said 3 for 45 and Dean said, what? Again, that could, signal a little bit more about how Dean feels about Jabari Parker as a player. But I think what's important there is 3 for 45 is already less than what he already turned down. He turned down 3 for 54. And again, you can listen to it whatever way you want. Jabari says, what did he say the other day? That, I wish offer would have been made or whatever. And again, okay, maybe that offer wasn't made, but as Zach Lowe, I think, articulately has put it, the Bucks were prepared to offer this. And so, maybe Jabari isn't lying that he was never offered it, but certainly his people were able to know that the Bucks were thinking about 3 for 54 as their offer, and then that offer didn't get made. So you can read into that however you may choose. But I think just trying to go through all of that, like, that's why this summer is and this decision is going to be so difficult, because there is just and I guess the dunked on offseason or the mock offseason kind of helps illustrate this point. Like, the deal he eventually ended up getting there was a 2 plus 1 for $27 million, and then that turned into a sign and trade, and we can talk about sign and trade options here in a little bit. But I just think this is a really bad offseason to be up as a free agent if you're any player in the league. And then two, like, I think Jabari Parker, who obviously believes a lot of things about the way that he can play, he's seen the guy that went number one get way too much money, and he saw the guy that got drafted number three get a good amount of money but also have a ton of injury clauses written into that contract. being sandwiched in between Wiggins and Embiid means that I would imagine he has a certain level of ego, a certain level of belief about his skills. And I don't want to say it's going to be a rude awakening, because I think a lot of people can see it coming, like can see the cap crunch coming this offseason. But I just don't see how these two sides can come anywhere close to a deal.
I don't think that it's like it's going to be anywhere close to getting 15 million per year or something. I mean, as you said, the mock offseason podcast illustrated that there's really so little money to go around. And I mean, as far as I think most people have said, Jabari is not the most desired restricted free agent out there. I mean, is he?
No, I'm not even sure he would be the fourth or fifth. Like, because you'd have Aaron Gordon above him. You would have
Clint Capella
above him.
For sure.
You'd have Marcus Smart above him.
I would say Julius Randle as well.
Randle. Yeah. Like,
maybe you should Nurkic.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I think the one thing Jabari may have going for him is that he may be perceived as more gettable than those guys. Like, and that's where so much of, you know, like the Bucks posturing and sort of what they project outwardly matters, right? I mean, if teams feel like the Bucks are done with Jabari and Budenholzer has no interest in keeping him, and you know they're just looking for an excuse not to match or something like that, then I mean it's certainly going to embolden some teams to think more seriously, you know, who may have some interest in him. Now, I mean, I think, you know, the biggest threats are always sort of the wild card teams, you know, the teams that are known to throw dumb money around, like, you know, the Kings, right? I mean, I think the Kings are a fascinating team, because I think if you're Zach LaVine or Jabari Parker, you are hoping the Kings do not blow their cap space on day one, because if they do, then I think that takes, you know, kind of a potentially weaponized team with cap space out of your negotiating stance. And again, like, you know, I think there was that like soft connection between Jabari and the Kings by Jason Jones the other day. But literally every team, you know, it's what, 6 to 8 teams maybe have real cap space. And, you know, how many of those would actually be interested in Jabari? I don't know. I don't really know. I mean, especially after the draft, right? Dallas Mavericks, they just drafted Luka. They've got Harrison Barnes making a ton of money. I mean, are they looking to add Jabari Parker to their equation? I mean, everyone seems to think that they're going to look at center. And, you know, the Bulls, I mean, Jesus, the Bulls, you know, they've got now a 4-5 combination in Lowry and Wendell Carter, and they've got LaVine, who's a huge threat to get overpaid as a sort of empty calorie scorer. Like, I know Jabari is a local kid, but, you know, are you bringing him back on a monster deal to play small forward with Lowry Markkanen? I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot of teams where the fit just doesn't seem to really make sense. And Sacramento as well. I mean, you just drafted Marvin Bagley. Like, do you really want to pair Marvin Bagley and Jabari Parker as your kind of small forward of the future? I mean, I know we wouldn't, but I mean, who knows what Vlade thinks about that. So it's a really kind of weird spot, because it's literally, you know, it's the old, you know, the old saying, it only takes one a-hole. I won't say the full word, but it only takes one person with less than stellar judgment who decides they want to dedicate that cap space to a guy. And again, the waiting times on matching offer sheets are a lot lower than they used to be. So nowadays, you know, it's only 2 days that teams have to turn around. But like we've said, you know, that doesn't start until July 6th at the earliest. And so you'd have to wait until July 8th to know whether or not you were getting a restricted free agent. And the first week of free agency is where tons happens. And that's usually where teams are not focusing on restricted free agents. So, you know, again, I think a lot of the question comes down to who's left over in week two looking to really spend money. And especially this year where a lot of teams are trying to keep their powder dry for 2019. You know, are teams really looking to add long-term salary, or are a lot of teams going to be, even that have cap space, maybe keeping one eye on 2019 and maybe not even looking to kind of spend all their money if they can't get get key guys. So yeah, there's just so many variables at play, but I think the main thing, if you're the Bucks, is even if you don't really want to keep Jabari, you at least have to keep up the charade such that a team isn't like, screw you guys, I'm just going to offer him you know, $13 million a year, and you're not going to match because you don't want him. I mean, again, I don't know if the Bucks don't want Jabari at that number. I would imagine they might match regardless of that offer number, just because A, they would be too embarrassed and would be afraid of the public blowback if they just let him walk at that number, which again is not like good basketball rationale necessarily, but it's a business, right? That stuff matters. And B, the better rationale would be, even if you don't think he's like, you know, a great fit or the guy that you really want to build around, is there a number at which, you know, what is the number at which you think you can still use him as an asset from a trade perspective, right? And you wouldn't, you know, if you match an offer sheet, you can't trade him for a year anyway. But, you know, if you do re-sign him, where is the value that, you know, if he's making $8 million a year, I wouldn't be that worried about being able to move Jabari Parker a year from now if you know, he's not happy with his role or something like that. If it's 15 a year, I mean, I know there's going to be a lot more cap space next summer and valuations are going to rise, but, you know, again, you're talking about a guy with a twice torn ACL, and, you know, if he's not happy here and agitating to get out, that could also be an ugly situation a year from now if he's got a monster contract. So yeah, there's just a lot of kind of ins and outs to it. And I think the challenge for the Bucks is, how do you sort of avoid having to make him like a massive offer while keeping open the possibility that teams are going to think that you're going to match an offer? Because if you want, you know, if the end game is to get a sign and trade, you have to walk that fine line. And that may mean not really making him any offer. It may mean just saying, go get yourself one.
Yeah. And why that's important is because if someone signs him to an offer sheet, you then cannot sign and trade him. Like that.
Correct, yep.
Like you have to make sure that team believes.
Whoa! Say stop! Don't sign the offer sheet. Wait!
Correct.
we're gonna match. So don't sign it.
We're definitely gonna match. Like you have to have that confidence, that posture, as you mentioned, that, you know, you're posturing towards the idea of, hey, we are going to absolutely bring him back. We absolutely are going to match. So you don't want to actually put that offer sheet out. You want to sign and trade for him. Like, so give us something interesting in a sign and trade. Like, and like you said, it is a fascinating game of chicken, because you don't want to overcommit yourself and then actually have to sign Jabari, but you never really have to sign him. But also at the same time, if you treat a player like that, there's a lot of stuff going on there. Also, Mark Barberousseen has a bunch of clients, so you do have to kind of think through all this and, you know, find a way to navigate all of it. Before we move on to some other ideas, Dean, I'm sure you are dying to get in on some Jabari Parker talk, so go for it.
So I mean, this is such a complicated thing. There are so many parameters.
Dean's just dying. He's not dying to get in on Jabari Parker
talk. I'm just dying to through. So, like, I mean, I think that the most important part about any contract that Jabari might want to sign for teams is going to be not the money as much as the duration of the contract. I mean, I don't think that any team is going to be willing to offer Jabari even 3 years of guaranteed, you know, I don't know, 12, 13, 12, 15 million or something. I think that all teams that might want to get Jabari are going to be looking for at least one team option a year on a 3-year deal. I mean, it doesn't make sense for any team to, you know, use cap space in 2021 on the possibility that Jabari is going to be healthy and he's going to be, you know, he's going to be invested in the team and he's not going to be bad on defense. I think that it would be more. I think that the team would be more willing to get him on a 2-year contract, which let's say 15 a year, than offer him like 3, 4, 40. And it's important because in signing trades, you can't include team options or player options in any deal signed by the player. So, like, I think that a signing trade is going to be harder than I would hope it would be, although you can use non-guaranteed, you know, parts of the last year of the contract. But I think that it's so complicated because, I mean, Jabari wants, I mean, first of all, he's quite unlucky, even without taking into account the injuries that he's had, because he's at the worst off-season, at least of, I don't know, like the past 11 years. There's no money around. everyone wants to sign one-on-one deals, or even, you know, one-year deals for the minimum. And he's in a class of restricted free agents who might be, you know, more desirable than him. I'm not going to say better, but more desirable. I don't think that the Bucks are super excited to bring him back, simply due, you know, to how last season ended and the fact that we don't know if he fits with Giannis. We don't know if he's a bad player, like the guys at the Dunkman podcast said. I think that was Zach Lowe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Zach Lowe with Kevin Arnovitz. So, it might be possible that Sabaris is just going to take the qualifying offer. I think that's a real possibility. If he doesn't see any teams, you know, making an offer until, I don't know, July 9th, 10th, I think that he might just sign the qualifying offer and say, you know what, next year there's going to be more money. I'm going to have 1 year to show that I'm healthy, that I can play, that I can, you know, incorporate myself in the system and possibly show some defensive value. And then next year I'm going to be an unrestricted free agent and teams are going to have more money and someone might be willing to pay me. And I mean, he could bet him if he's so confident of himself. I think he might take that bet.
I think it's so tough to think of someone that's had his injury history and his resume thus far with the defensive questions and, you know, kind of what he is as an NBA player, like those questions that still exist. Man, it would be such a risk to take the qualifying offer. But like you said, like Zach has already said that the Bucks are kind of internally worried that that is exactly what he'll do. And I just think it's going to be really interesting to sort of watch and see what could happen here. So all right, so we kind of covered the scenario of the Bucks signing Jabari Parker, even with Dean not loving that idea. We did kind of go through that. Let's go through. Can you guys just walk me through the mechanics, and whoever wants to go first, Frank or Dean, I don't care. Can you walk me through the mechanics of a sign and trade, how that works, and, you know, maybe why it ultimately might not be that realistic of an option?
Why don't you walk yourself through the mechanics of a sign and trade, Eric? I don't know, Dean, do you want to handle this? I'm sick of having to think on this podcast, god damn it. Normally I just come on and just talk and just ramble for an hour straight and never have to really think twice about it. But I don't know, Dean, do you want to talk about it? I'm happy to do it. I think probably the only thing I think is really that important is, like, you know, the potential of the base year compensation stuff if they're trading him to a team above the cap. But, you know, I think in general it's more just the challenges that are related to kind of the practicality of finding a team that's actually willing to give up something to pay him whatever the number is at that point.
Yeah, let's just keep it very simple. I mean, Eric said already that the first rule is that if a player signs an offer sheet from another team, he can't be traded. So that excludes, you know, any possibility of making some trade if the player comes to reach an agreement with the team and the team, you know, just, you know, says, here's the sheet, you know, sign it, and we're done. So it starts with two teams. Often it's two teams where, you know, the team that wants the player doesn't have enough cap space to get him. And before the player signs any offer sheet, the teams discuss and they say, well, we want to trade for this player. We don't have the cap space. But we're going to trade you something back. And you're going to sign him to a contract that we're going to dictate and trade him back to us. And there are some minutiae to it. I mean, if one of the teams actually, we're going to start at the beginning of it. Depending on the size of the contract, on the amount of money that he's going to get in the first year, there has to be a connection between the two trades, the incoming and the outgoing money. So I don't have the numbers with me now, but up to a certain point, the outgoing salary for a team has to be up to 175% of the incoming salary plus 100K. Then up to another point, I think it's 19 million. It's up to the outgoing salary plus 5 million. And then over that, and for tax luxury teams, it's 125% plus 100,000. So the problem with signing trades is that you essentially cannot, I mean, for contracts that are substantial, like let's say if Jabari were to sign for, I don't know, $30 million a year, you can't trade him for like, I don't know, picks or a much lower, higher contract. There has to be a very, you know, a direct correlation between them that's within the numbers that I mentioned. So the problem is that since the Bucks are above the tax, any contract that they sign Jabari to is going to be subject to the base year compensation rule. And I think that Frank had kind of explained it like a couple of weeks ago, which is that if the team that signs the player is above the cap, all outgoing salary for that player's contract counts as half or the previous contract of the player, whichever is higher. So let's say that Jabari signed, you know, she signed for 3 years and $15 million per year. The outgoing salary is going to be account only for 7.5, while the other team's incoming salary is still going to be $15 million. And so you have to add more pieces to that to get within the numbers that I mentioned. And there was this notion that you guys spoke about last week that you can't add pieces to a signing trade, which I have no idea how it came up. I mean, I still can't find who came up with that idea that, you know, you can't add extra pieces to a signing trade, because there's no such provision in any rule that I've ever read. And it's actually kind of funny because I was talking to Eric about it, and the most famous trade of the past decade, which was the one that sent all the Brooklyn picks to Boston for, you know, their all-stars, featured like a signing trade within a trade that had like 8 players outgoing from the Nets, which was insane. I mean, there is precedence that shows that you can actually add pieces to a signing trade. So anyway, that's the main problem. Apart from that, everything else is just like a normal trade. The only problem is that you have to wait until free agency starts because you have to sign the player to a contract. But it's not. It doesn't have to be the moratorium. I think it can be on July 1st, from what I remember, because it's not like you have to sign in another player, sign your own player.
So, essentially, I guess, stuff to remember with the sign-in trade, the money gets funky because of base year compensation. We've talked about that. We talked about that a couple weeks back. We talked about it, obviously, just now. The second thing, other players from the team sign-in trading someone can be added. So, if the Bucks need to add Eric Bledsoe to a deal to get to $20 million, to 22, whatever it may be, to get to a higher number, they can definitely do that. And then number three, an offer sheet cannot be signed by another team, because once an offer sheet is signed, then a sign and trade is no longer possible. So those are the three things to remember. And thus, as you can see with those three conditions, it's pretty difficult to do a sign and trade. So I would say the one that they did on the Dunkdown mock offseason was Jabari Parker at a 2+1 for $27 million, essentially the mid-level, to Memphis, sign and trade for Jamichael Green and a first rounder that was heavily protected. So that was what they ended up doing, and I think it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens with Jabari Parker, and then does it get to a spot where on July 4th or July 5th someone says, yeah, you know, we really want Jabari, and we know that you're going to match everything because you've postured so well, and you've told us that you will sign him and match any contract that we sign, so let's do a sign-and-trade, and then let's get that done. And I guess from that, though, let's take out Jabari's cap number. Then what are the Bucks at, Frank?
So if you wipe out Jabari's $20.3 million, you get knocked all the way down to under $104 million. And again, keep in mind that number includes Zeller's non-guaranteed $1.9, and it also includes the $3.5 that Teletovic, you know, again, you'd expect that to be wiped out down the road. So, yeah, I mean, if Jabari just walks, then you really have no luxury tax concerns, even if you do sign that full mid-level player this year. But obviously, you know, at that point, your problems are not really tax problems. Your main problems are probably more PR problems, just because a lot of people will be, you know, pissed off. But maybe not us quite so much. We'd probably be more understanding of that than maybe the casual fan. But yeah, then that obviously kind of knocks you way down. That, but again, not to the point where you'd have any real cap space. So, you know, that's obviously one thing that I feel like certain people often get wrong about free agents, right? It's like last summer when a certain Bucks insider would talk about Greg Monroe opting out of his salary.
They got $18 million in space.
Yeah, exactly. The Bucks were not going to have $18 million in space because, again, you know, Jabari Parker, similarly, you know, $20 million cap hold. That doesn't roll over into cap space if he leaves or whatever. So, again, you know, the question is, what would you rather do? Give Jabari Parker contract X, or you know, keep that powder dry for the longer term and potentially use some of that this summer on a mid-level free agent? Or, as I said, you know, if Jabari's number was small enough, you could potentially keep Parker and sign a mid-level guy this summer. But again, I mean, that all kind of also impacts your kind of future flexibility and kind of how you view that. So, I mean, bottom line is, you know, kind of keep it simple, right? Like, how good is Jabari Parker? That's the kind of fundamental question the Bucks have to answer. Yep. What kind of player is, you know, what, how does he fit with this team? Is he a cornerstone or is he not? If he's just a guy, then okay, maybe, you know, there is a number that's, you know, mid-level or a little higher that you feel like he can be a good value add, or, you know, you feel like he's a trade asset at that piece, but, you know, he's probably going to be pissed. And I think, you know, in the dunked on offseason, I think they actually had the Bucks offering 3 years, 40, or at least that was sort of like a number that had kind of was thrown out. But then, you know, basically it became sort of a tug of war where Memphis, I think Memphis was also willing to do that. But then when they realized that Jabari just wanted out, then they're like, well, we'll give you the mid-level, I think. Yep. And then he ended up really getting only the mid-level, which, again, would he even sign a 2+1 for that amount?
Seems
unlikely. I don't even know, right? Yeah, I mean, like, maybe even with his injury history, maybe he would only sign a 1 year $8 million number at that amount. But again, you can't sign and trade for a 1 year contract either. So so anyway, lots of rules that kind of dictate what is possible but fundamentally, I think so much of this is going to come down to negotiating tactics. It's going to come down to ego. It's going to come down to whether Jabari Parker wants to be here based on sort of the vision of the future that the Bucks currently have, especially what Mike Budenholzer wants to do with them. And obviously if they don't see a future for him, then, you know, you probably hope that they find out a way to get him someplace else while still getting some value for him. But, you know, like we said as well, you almost need him to become desperate just to go someplace else and willing to sign for a lot less than he wants, because that's the only way he's going to really be worth signing and trading for, or at least giving up real assets for. You know, again, like if the Kings want to give him $19 million a year or something, and they know the Bucks are not willing to do that much, why would they give up any value for him? Or, you know, if you're giving up a ton of money for him in the first place, you're not going to give up as nearly as much value. And it's a lot harder to do a trade anyway, because you have to ship money out, and who knows what the Bucks even want any of the Kings' money that they have at that point. So yeah, it's really difficult. I think if a team with cap space, you know, is interested and is willing to really break the bank, then I think, to be honest, there's a good chance it becomes a staring contest over an offer sheet and maybe a daring of the Bucks to match. But yeah, I don't know. I won't pretend to know that I can predict where the Bucks sort of, you know, point would be where they'd say uncle and just let him walk.
I'm imagining the game on The Price is Right. Was it Cliff Climb, like where he's going up the hill? And then the yodeling in the background, and then eventually the dollar amount becomes too high, and then you fall off the end. Like, that's what the Bucks, they have to figure out where that number is. Like, what is it that they're willing to match? So those are, I think, all of the Jabari Parker scenarios. We could also throw in that he signs a qualifying offer, and then in that situation, the Bucks would still have the mid-level. So I think with all of the Jabari Parker situations, aside from him signing for more than 13, whatever Bobby Marks said it was. So I guess for him, anything less than $14 million per year, the Bucks will have pretty much a full MLE to fit in below the luxury tax number. So I think let's try to think about free agents a little bit. And I mean, there's a bunch of guys I'm looking at the dunked on mock offseason, and there's a bunch of people on this list. And I guess I'm just curious. I'll ask both of you this question. We can start with Dean and then Frank. Dean, like, what type of players are you looking for? And again, I would say remember that this player can probably only fit in the MLE. So I would love a Chris Paul type. I would love a Paul George type, a LeBron James type. Those all sound like great types, but those are not types that the Bucks would actually be able to afford. So what is it, you know, that you feel makes sense for the Bucks, or are there positions you're targeting? What would you be targeting with a full MLE? And that can be one player or multiple.
Okay, I'm going to preface this with the notion that I would not be signing any player unless he's a very young talent that somehow got away to anything other than one plus one deal. The second one being either a team option or, you know, partly guaranteed. Just, you know, because I think that the next offseason and the one after that, mostly the next one, because the 2020 free agency class is not great, are quite important. I mean, okay, I want to say that, though. The most important thing for me is to have max cap space in 2020 so the Bucks can sign DJ Augustin the max contract. Because he's going to be a champion, and I know that. He's an amazing player, and Frank doesn't know it. Actually, frankly, from all the messages that I've sent you about DJ Augustin, like every night for a week, did I change your mind at all?
Well, I just thought you were making fun of Eric, so no, you didn't change my mind.
Oh, my God.
How dare you? I don't know what's going on.
How can you not understand how great Augustin is? anyway, I'm going to be looking for relatively short contracts, and I'm mostly looking for wings. Maybe a center, although I don't think that anyone is left on the market that I would be interested in. Maybe Kevon Looney for, I don't know, like $3 million. But I'm mostly looking at, okay, I'm going to go with a few guys. Most of them you might know pretty well. I think that at least Bud would be interested in getting Ersin back on a one-year deal, which would be, you know, I don't know, for like $3 million. Marco Bellinelli for a couple of million, and I would be looking at, this is complicated, Mike Scott. Who else might I want? I mean, I would try. I don't know, because I saw today that the Bulls extended the qualifying offer to David Mabba, and he was someone I was quite interested in. But I don't think that you can get him now for anything other, you know, less than $6 million, so that the Bulls won't match. But I'm mostly looking for cheap wings. Maybe a couple of veterans. Oh, and this is something I want to ask Frank and then Eric. Do you believe that Jed's going to be back next year?
I mean, you know, it's sort of there. He's got that sort of Rasputin quality at this point. Like you think there's no way he's going to be back. And then, you know, do you kind of, I don't think he'll be back. I think, again, it's not, I mean, they kind of went to the very latter stages of the summer last year before bringing him back. And I think, you know, obviously there was the kid close relationship that probably played a role in that as well. So, you know, I think this is finally the summer where Jet does not come back. But we'll see. I guess, you know, never want to keep him, count him out, but as well, you know, just with, you know, different coaching staff, I think probably the novelty is maybe worn off a little bit. So I don't think Jet will be back. I think, it's so interesting with the market, because I came up with kind of a list of, you know, just looking at the free agent names, just some guys who kind of fit different roles. And I think, you know, certainly if the assumption is that Jabari is gone, then certainly, you know, looking for either a kind of hybrid forward who can play a little bit of both spots, or, you know, a kind of a more classic kind of stretch four, would be kind of the obvious, you know, people, given that, you know, Mears is gone, Jabari would be gone, and DJ Wilson never was here in the first place. So I think some of the guys, I mean, a couple of them Dean mentioned, Ersan and Mike Scott, were the first two names on my list. You know, I certainly would expect both those guys you could get for less than, you know, even the taxpayer mid-level. And, you know, I think certainly Ersan might want to go back to Philly, but if Philly has big designs to use cap space, you know, keep in mind, I mean, he was picked up on a minimum deal, so they can't, you know, they may not have the flexibility to offer him, you know, a real offer anyway beyond the minimum, but, you know, we'll kind of see how that works out. But I think Ersan's interesting just because he brings a little bit of that more ruggedness and stretchiness, and obviously we all know kind of what Ersan brings. You know, I think if you're serious about playing more small lineups, then Ersan and Giannis, you know, whoever you want to call as the center in those lineups, obviously they do different things, but those could potentially be interesting, or just Ersan as the backup to Giannis. And then Mike Scott, agreed, you know, kind of more pure, like, just, you know, doesn't play as much, you know, maybe not a great defender, but shoots. And then kind of a couple other names sort of in that similar mode, like Dante Cunningham, Anthony Tolliver, you know, older vets that you wouldn't want to sign for more than a year, but, you know, again, could plug in and stretch the floor. I mean, Tolliver's a guy I've always been impressed with, just like, I mean, even defensively, like not getting, you know, being able to not be like completely overwhelmed even by Giannis. Obviously,
yeah, he did well against Giannis.
Yeah, so I thought he's actually a pretty interesting guy. I think he's mid-30s at this point, so, you know, again, he's an older guy, and at some point he'll probably fall off a cliff, but I think those guys are kind of interesting. You know, I think the guy who I have zero expectation he would be back in Milwaukee, just because, you know, if they didn't want him back last year, then I don't think Mike Budenholzer is going to be the guy that comes in and says I want him back, is Michael Beasley. But I think Beasley's just an interesting guy. Yeah. But I think Beasley's an interesting guy to look at because, you know, again, he can play both forward spots. He can be that kind of instant offense guy. And again, I mean, I don't know. Is Michael Beasley 80% of Jabari Parker, or is he 120% of Jabari Parker? I don't know. You could argue both ways, because Beasley is, again, he's not going to, you know, you're not going to look to him to score 20 points a game or something like that at this point of his career. But you don't necessarily need a guy to score 20 points a game, especially on this team with Giannis
and Chris. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, so you don't need that guy, given you've got Giannis and Chris taking up pretty much, you know, all the kind of 3-4 minutes, at least from a starting perspective. So Beasley being able to play as a 3 or a 4, and being a guy that can be that, you know, the icebreaker, as they used to call him, when you know, shit was going sideways offensively, you could just throw him the ball and he could go get you a bucket. Again, that's not very Mike Budenholzer-ish, but I think it's one of those things, like, why spend, you know, pick your upper bound for Jabari, why spend that on Jabari when, you know, Beasley's definitely a better defender than Jabari Parker, which isn't necessarily an endorsement of Michael Beasley's defense, but you know, it is an endorsement of him not being Jabari Parker defensively. And he obviously also is a guy who knows his role. You know, he knows he's not going to be a star. He doesn't have any illusions about that. So I think that's one of those interesting philosophical questions, you know, Beasley versus Jabari, you know, whatever Jabari is going to get paid versus whatever Michael Beasley is going to get paid. I don't know that you're actually better off with Jabari Parker there. In fact, I'm pretty sure you're probably going to be better off taking Mike Beasley for very little money, even though it's not necessarily the sexiest thing. So that's kind of another just general sort of, I think, idea. And then I think kind of other hybrid forwards. So these guys are not necessarily like Beasley exactly, but, you know, Mario Hezonja, I think, is interesting just because, especially if you're trying to, you know, find someone who's on the younger side. Obviously, the Magic sort of gave up on Hezonja. He's a weird player. I think he showed some interesting stuff against the Bucks, as, you know, being able to play either as a 3 or a small ball 4. He's obviously a guy who, you know, came into the league expected to be a shooter, but he's got athleticism and you know, kind of a ruggedness and kind of, you know, there's something about him that I think, you know, he still has the ability to, maybe he's not going to be a star or anything like that, but is there a scenario where Mariozone becomes actually like a certifiably good NBA player for quite a long time? I think that's still a possibility. I don't know about his attitude or his head. That's a question. I'm not sure. But again, like, he's not a terrible defender, I don't think. And again, in the right system, I think he could be an interesting candidate for kind of, you know, Hawks/Bucks University. So I think Hezonja actually is like kind of an interesting piece that maybe could be worth taking a shot on if you know, presuming Jabari were gone. And, you know, I threw Doug McDermott in here, although the fact that he doesn't play defense probably makes him not interesting to Bud. But he's obviously, you know, probably the best shooter of all the kind of stretch/hybrid guys I've mentioned. And, you know, again, he's been a vagabond for a reason. But I think, again, like, you know, if you put him on the court with Giannis, just a guy who can fill it up shooting wise and give a little bit of that again, like, can you hide him defensively? I don't know. But on like a short deal, he's obviously a younger guy. And, you know, at this point in his career, I think, you know, he can shoot. And again, can he do the other stuff passively enough? I don't know. But I wouldn't close the door on it.
Okay. I can just feel the excitement from Bucks fans listening to this podcast right now with all of the names that we have listed off. they are jacked up, guys. But I do think this should hopefully, you know, sober Bucks fans a little bit. Like, this is what you're looking at. Like, there's not a lot of money for the Bucks to use, even if Jabari Parker does not return. Like, there just isn't a ton out there. There might be good players out there, but, you know, there isn't a ton for this Bucks team to spend. So I think those are some of the names that make a lot of sense to me. I'm curious about, there's a couple guys I wanted to point out. Hezonja's one I'm really interested in. I think he ended up starting like 30 games for the Magic last year. He was starting in like January, February, and then like the March, April part of the year. He kind of showed some stuff that might be interesting. And I know he's always had those star qualities that people like. And again, this is not me saying he's a star, but like he does have those things. And, you know, kind of some of that swagger and stuff that Frank mentioned, I think he's always been kind of interesting to me. And I've always wondered, you know, is he a change of scenery guy? Like, can everything kind of hit for him if he gets out of Orlando? But I don't know if that would be the case. Some of the other guys,
and I would add on that too, like, I never really got him as like a high lottery prospect. Like, yeah, you know, again, like he has some athleticism, in theory he can shoot, but he isn't, you know, a super dynamic hip handler, passer, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, I would say my interest is also certainly not because of novelty from when I liked him as a as a draft pick. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's interesting. He's only, you know, let's see, he's only, I think, 23 years old. Yeah, he's only 23 years old at this point. So, you know, let's just say I'm not sold that anybody who didn't find their way in Orlando is some lost cause necessarily, just because I don't think Orlando was necessarily a great environment in the first place. So, yeah, he's interesting. Plus, I mean, wouldn't we love to just like trick ourselves into thinking Mario Hezonja is going to be a good player for us? Like,
yes,
from like July, August, September. Like, that would be a fun process for us to do, to sort of con ourselves into thinking Hezonja is going to be like the you know, fourth wheel on a Bucks contender or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. So that's why I mean, maybe that's purely selfish from my perspective, that, you know, that could be a fun couple of months for us. But he's someone I'm thinking about. And then a couple shooters, and again, these guys probably get into a range where I'm a little bit uncomfortable with how much they'd be making, but Wayne Ellington and Joe Harris. I think at the start of my thoughts about the offseason, let's say a month or two ago, I was thinking maybe Wayne Ellington gets the full mid-level. And now maybe I'm not quite as sure of it. But I do think if we're thinking about Giannis and how to build around him, shooters, right? You want to find the best shooters. And I think Ellington does a lot of interesting stuff as he is able to shoot some off the move. He's able to come off screens. He's able to put it on the deck a little bit. Like, I think there's a lot of exciting things there with Wayne Ellington. So that'd be really interesting to me. Joe Harris is also someone I find strangely interesting. Had a great year with the Nets this past year. And again, I've warned many times about, you know, thinking about that Nets team and a team that just chucks a bunch of threes and, you know, is going to give players a ton of confidence. Like, Joe Harris probably isn't going to get those same shots. Actually, I can guarantee he's not going to get those same shots here in Milwaukee. He's not going to get as many shots in Milwaukee, but I do wonder kind of what he could do. I don't know if that's like a $4 or $5 million per year guy. Maybe it's more. So like I said, both those guys I think are going to be a little bit more sure things than some of the other guys that we've already mentioned, but they're both interesting to me, but also make me uncomfortable because they're getting into that kind of danger zone of bad contract. And then the last person I was kind of thinking about, and it's Davis Bertans, and I'm curious with him just because he is obviously a little bit on the older side. He'll be 26 this season, and he didn't really have crazy numbers or anything like that in San Antonio, but he did always kind of just get plugged into lineups and work, and you have the Budenholzer and Pop connection, and he's just someone that I think people largely forget about, and he's largely forgettable, so I get why. But I do wonder if he's someone that, you know, maybe you can get on a minimum and plug in and might be able to do all of those things that Budenholzer likes, where the ball keeps moving, he's able to make the right pass, he's able to make the right read, he's able to shoot 37%+ from three. So I am curious if that would be another good one as well.
I would agree with that last one. I think that he's great. I don't know if they're going to let him go, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's a team option guy, I think. So I just assume, I thought he was a team option guy. So I just assumed that they wouldn't let him walk, but cause I agree. I saw him on the free agent list and my first thought was, oh, he's actually pretty interesting. Ironically, given Jabari Parker as a discussion topic, Bertans is one of the few NBA players currently, I don't know if there are any other ones other than him and Jabari who have torn the ACL in the same knee twice. So he's a guy who I don't think you ever even really hear anybody talk about it because it happened before he came to the NBA. But yeah, I think Bertans is actually pretty interesting, even though he obviously hasn't been a huge had a huge role in San Antonio. But if he were available, I think he'd be pretty interesting. And let me ask you this as well. So some guys that I thought were interesting, who I'd have to double check what they went for on the Dunked On podcast mock off season, but some guys that I never would have really put in the category of guys that the Bucks could target, and I'm still not expecting them to be in the discussion for them, but some guys that I thought were interesting that went for, I think all mid-level or lower. I think Avery Bradley went for mid-level or lower. I think he went for like a 1 year or something like that. Ironically, they had the Bucks getting Rudy Gay on, I think, what, sub mid-level?
Four.
I think it was 4 million, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not to say that I'm like a huge Rudy Gay fan, but, you know, again, if you're looking for somebody who can pretty much approximate sort of a Jabari Parker, like, off-the-bench super sub type role, I mean, Gay was actually pretty effective in San Antonio last year. You know, and again, that's for the Spurs. So, you know, can the Bucks approximate that? I don't know. But if you're looking for kind of like that hybrid 3-4 who could, you know, again, he's 31, so he's not like some future solution. But if you're just looking to kind of plug a hole and have some depth behind Giannis and Chris and give you some of that scoring punch, well, I mean, Rudy Gay does some of that stuff. And again, I'm not saying give him multiple years, but he's kind of interesting. And Will Barton, another kind of swingman who everybody, I think, assumes is going to get more money than the mid-level or certainly wants more money than the mid-level. I don't know. I really don't know what he's going to get. I'm sure he wants to start somewhere. I don't think that's going to happen in Denver. So he's
so
kind
annoying.
Of another. So anyway, it's just interesting. You know, I think when you, again, not that, you know, the sort of the Dunked On exercise is indicative of what's going to happen, but I think it does sort of simulate the supply and demand issues that are going to be very poignant this summer. And again, not to say that the exact same guys who got left out in the cold in their mock off season will get left out in this summer's mock off season, but I think it is a good proxy for there are going to be some good players who are signing 1 year deals for mid level or less. You know, some guys that in previous summers you would have expected to sign, you know, 10+ million multi-year per year, multi-year deals. And in this summer, they're not going to see that value. So, a lot of them are just going to want to sign one plus ones or just 1 year deals and have another chance to go back at it next year. And I don't know. I'm actually kind of curious if teams are going to go so overboard trying to save money for next season, which again, if everybody has cap space next summer, then the cap space isn't worth as much. So part of me kind of wonders, like, is there a sweet spot where guys, and again, not that you're going to get great players signing multi-year MLE deals, but like for a team like the Bucks, which, you know, can't necessarily easily, it's not like they're just going to easily open up max cap room next summer to go sign some superstar free agent. If you are kind of in a spot where maybe it's harder to do that, you know, do you just try to take advantage of the market this summer and get somebody who, you know, again, maybe isn't like a guy that should be getting $15 million a year, but, you know, is there a guy out there that you'd be happy to get for, you know, a full MLE deal that can be had for, you know, multiple years, and a year or two from now you say, wow, I have a really good player on a well below market contract. I don't know what that is. I know I started to think about when they were talking about Derek Favors, and, you know, Derek Favors maybe take, well, would Derek Favors take like a multi-year MLE deal? And I haven't talked about centers at all, just because the Bucks have too many centers, and I think there's so much value to be had. I think signing centers for very little money, but it is kind of interesting, you know, that there are going to be guys who I think you could probably get for multiple years at the MLE that you know, are more than just the guys that we normally hate signing to those types of contracts, as Eric and I have said. So I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on the multi-year thing, because I think we all agree that, you know, just as a matter of practice, multi-year MLE deals are fraught with danger. But maybe this offseason there's some opportunities to get value that way.
Bertans is a restricted free agent. Dean Hoppen.
I want to say about Bertans, I think that I read that they extended the qualifying offer. So it's going to take, well, more than just the minimum to get him. I agree about the middle level exception. I think that most teams are either going to be anxious to, you know, get short deals and not go for 3 year deals on middle level exceptions or even four, because the potential of cap space. And I actually mentioned that the other day to Eric. I think that teams that have no chance of landing any kind of free agent of worth notice next year are still going to be trying to get cap space. Because, you know, there's this possibility that something might happen, or they might, you know, accumulate more assets next year because a team that wants to sign a couple of free agents needs to get out of a contract. And one of those teams might be the Bucks, because next year they're going to be having John Henson and Dele both on expiring contracts, and they might want to move those if they want to make a move. So I think that all teams are going to try to be very, very strict with how they spend the money. I think that most teams are going to be spending the mid-level exception on players and splitting the contracts, and that's going to drive the market further down. And I think that there's many, many people, you know, who are going to be signed to teams for cheap. I think that the Bucks can benefit from that. I mean, they can get two or three players if they combine, you know, the mid-level exception and the biannual exception on, you know, even on one on plus one deals. And I think that, you know, it's, I wouldn't target center regarding what Frank said about, you know, the guys that might be available, because it's not how the league goes right now. And I actually did some research, which I showed to Eric some of it. And I mean, there's no correlation between rebounding and championships, or even getting through the conference finals. And we see that this trend is now extremely important, you know, for teams like Houston or the Warriors, who were last in rebounding. And I mean, the Bucks have a project in Thonmaker, who, you know, might be an NBA player. And I
if
think
people if people can... don't get that reference, they're so weirded out, but I'm here for that reference.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the Bucks are going to be smart with how they spend the money. I think that most teams are going to be so, and it's going to be interesting, almost fascinating.
It is going to be fascinating, and I guess one spot where I'm quite fascinated is just the idea that, you know, if everyone is thinking 1 year deals, is there something to be said of going like 2 years, $6 million on somebody, and then that is what gets you that person, and then all of a sudden in the summer of 2019, where everyone gets cap space and essentially executes another summer of 2016 where they overspend because there's cap space, we got to spend it. You know, does all of a sudden that contract look better? And I'm curious to see if teams use it in that way, because I do think you could use it to your advantage where, you know, there's going to be a bunch of people that are still available at the end. And, you know, they're thinking, okay, whatever, if I get the minimum or if I get this 1 year, $3 million deal, you know, if you're somebody, if you're the Bucks, like, do you go 2 for $6 and then all of a sudden you lock this guy in? I know that can be kind of scary to use cap space on the margins going forward. And, you know, you always, with the contracts that they have, you always want to be kind of keeping those options open on like the backside of the roster. But at the same time, I do wonder if that's a spot where you can find an advantage. And if you are willing to go those 2 years, can you get some more of those guys? So I think it's going to be really interesting. Will Barton was someone that you mentioned, Frank. I mean, I think, when you think about the modern NBA, that's a modern NBA player. So I find him interesting as well. Nerlens Noel, what does anybody think about him? Because he seems to be just hanging out on the fringes. I've had a number of Bucks fans ask me about him, and he seems like someone that, despite struggling multiple places, is still regarded as someone that might have some upside, that might be a strong center. Frank, what are you thinking on Nerlens Noel?
Yeah, I mean, we should mention he was in the dunked on mock offseason. I think they had him signing for the minimum with the Bucks.
That's
correct. So, and it was interesting because, I mean, they were talking about like, well, I mean, isn't he the best center on the Bucks if he signs here? And that's, you know, again, like, I think from a pure talent standpoint, I think he's more talented than John Henson. But obviously, you know, it's a concern, the fact that he really washed out in Dallas last year and just couldn't find a role at all. But, you know, Nerlens Noel at his best, the kind of best version we saw in Philly, absolutely is better than anything we've seen from any of the other Bucks centers. So he would be an interesting guy to kind of take a flyer on. You know, I think if you waived Zeller and gave Noel like a small deal, you know, and he's obviously probably looking to rehabilitate his value, but if you gave him, you know, 1 year and, you know, even if it's a few million bucks, to kind of slide into Zeller's role, he'd be interesting because, again, he has the potential to be a lot better than that. And you know, again, I mean, he's a guy that has shown that he can, you know, protect the rim and be obviously a very mobile center that obviously does things that, you know, again, I think, not that he's like the idealized modern center, not that he's going to be Clint Capella for you next summer. But he certainly has a skill set that I think, you know, again, if he can just harness his talents, he's got to be able to figure out a way to be something in this league. And so, yeah, I think he's an interesting guy, but obviously, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, does Bud sort of steer clear of guys who have any personality question marks? Like, do they, you know, just go super safe and just sign guys who are like, you know, idealized, like, you know, basically sort of what they did in the draft, right? Like lower ceiling guys, maybe not guys with tantalizing upside, but guys that, you know, you're going to like, basically are going to live up to their potential, and guys who are going to plug in and work hard and not, you know, be an issue. Or do they take a shot on, you know, maybe one guy, two guys who maybe do bring, I don't know, a little baggage, let's say, on the premise that, like, you know, like we've been saying, you know, not that Nerlens Noel is like a home run swing, but maybe he's a swing for a double.
Yeah.
And do you at least try to go for that? Or do you say, yeah, we're just fine with Tyler Zeller being sort of the unsexy, but, you know, useful guy who's good at making himself available to Giannis around the basket, which I appreciate. but again, not a guy who's going to be a game changer defensively. And again, I think a lot of it too is like, you know, I mean, I can picture Nerlens Noel being a useful defender in a playoff series, like the version of Noel, and again, not like the 100% best upside version of Nerlens, but like, you know, like the good version of Nerlens Noel who played in Philadelphia. Like, I can picture him being a useful defender in the playoffs, more useful than John Henson, just because I think he's going to be more switchable and more mobile. So again, I don't know, like, is that something that the Bucks actually are willing to roll dice on? I don't know if it's him or some other guy, but they're absolutely going to be really cheap, solid centers available this summer, and That's why I have no expectation that John Henson is going to get traded, because why would you ever try to acquire him unless, you know, maybe some trade where like another team has like a bad, you know, kind of a comparable salary at another position where they don't need you know, a different position or something like that. But I don't know. I just can't really picture a trade that doesn't involve like giving up too much in asset terms for Henson. So I just assume we're stuck with sort of the center rotation we've got.
Dean, you have any Noel thoughts, or do you want to go to our last thing that we're going to talk about?
I agree with what Frank said. I'm too intrigued by Noel. I think that he can be a great player due to how switchy he is. Even when he was in his rookie season, he was great at, you know, one guy improving players. And I think that by my metrics, which when I did like 5 months ago, he was one of the best in the league at defending the perimeter. And I would be interested, as long as it's, you know, 1 year deal and with very little money, just, you know, to see if he fits with the team. And I mean, I don't think that Bud is going to be too sad about signing Noel. I mean, he did have Howard on his team.
Yeah. That is a good point. Also,
another guy who might be available at close to the minimum salary, Dwight Howard.
No, thank you. All right.
By the way, can I just get in? I think the center. If you actually did need a center, I think there are like kind of every shape and flavor of center you could probably find for very little money. I mean, you know, some of the other names out there. I mean, Kevon Looney, right? Milwaukee native Kevon Looney could be somewhat interesting, just as kind of like a hustle guy. Again, he obviously was exploited by James Harden and Chris Paul, but in general, he's, you know, more switchier than most
people are big men. Exposed by those two.
Yeah,
though, so
exactly. But you know, Kyle O'Quinn, a guy that, you know, everybody, I feel like every basketball nerd is like Kyle O'Quinn forever. But O'Quinn, Kevon Looney, Nerlens, or if you just want like a pure floor stretcher who doesn't really play defense. I mean, Channing Frye, I'm sure you could get for the minimum if you wanted just like a guy who's just going to go out and gun and space the floor around Giannis. So yeah, depending on kind of what you want, there's a lot of different types of players that, again, if you had a need for a center, you can fill it pretty cheaply this summer.
All right. Last thing I wanted to talk about, obviously this is a free agency podcast, but also, I mean, I think it's kind of mock off-season type stuff. Today, friend of the podcast and the host of the Open Floor podcast on Sports Illustrated, Andrew Sharp. You should be listening to Open Floor because it might be the best NBA podcast out there that's not name the Low Post. It is fantastic. You should listen to it with him and Ben Golliver. But in his off-season free agency preview, he said the Milwaukee Bucks are listening to any and all offers for Eric Bledsoe. Let's go. Let's put a percent chance you believe Eric Bledsoe will be traded this off-season. I can go first if I you know, can buy you guys a little bit more time to think through it. But I would say, I mean, it feels like he's a tough one because, you know, maybe people are now excited about expiring contracts. We don't really know. I think that's one thing we're trying to figure out. But, you know, are you taking that expiring contract? Like, does it take a first to get rid of Eric Bledsoe? I don't think that's a good trade because Eric Bledsoe was actually a good player for the Bucks last year. So I'm going to put it on the lower end. I'm going to say like 30% chance that Eric Bledsoe will be traded this offseason. Frank, where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real variable is Budenholzer. I mean, I think if you didn't have a coaching change, then, you know, you're probably more likely to not see a move. But I think, you know, again, just not knowing what Budenholzer wants, you know, I don't think he's going to look at Bledsoe as like the answer to all of the Bucks' problems. So I don't know. We'll see. But by the same token, it's like, would I trade Bledsoe straight up for Dennis Schroeder? No, I don't want Dennis Schroeder's long-term salary, and I don't think he solves the Bucks' problems either. So, and Budenholzer should have the best view on that of anyone since he coached him the last few years. Bledsoe's tough because, you know, he could have some value in the sense that he's not long-term salary. He isn't like paid a crazy amount this year. So if you are trading to a team that just needs somebody who's, you know, productive this year, obviously we've talked about, you know, do you try to, wherever LeBron goes, you know, can you have another clutch guy in Bledsoe follow him there because of potential synergy that LeBron would want him? I don't know. But Bledsoe is kind of one of those guys who, you know, isn't going to be, he's not like a bad contract or anything, but he's also probably not a guy that other teams are going to look at as a long-term solution, given he's expiring in his age. So, you know, kind of he's kind of one of those guys who's not a major asset at this point. And, you know, I think from the Bucks perspective, as much as people say like, well, he's not a great fit, I mean, you know, like, I mean, he's a hell of a lot better than trying to give those minutes to Delly. I mean, I think he's better than Brogdon. I mean, I think he's clearly the best point guard on this team. And again, that's maybe not satisfying. But I think it's an obvious question that the Bucks have to figure out. Like, okay, if you're going to trade Bledsoe or get rid of him somehow, then who are you slotting into that spot? Because again, I mean, you know, he is a guy who can create his own shot, and he is a guy that, you know, again, he's not a great passer or anything like that. But when we saw Yurga, I mean, the Bucks, you know, they were a pretty good team when they had Eric Bledsoe on the floor. And again, not that he's the be all end all, but you know, I think you have to have a solution if you're going to get rid of him. And I don't know what that is.
Dean, what do you think about trading Eric Bledsoe?
Okay, I'm gonna.
Did I actually say what my percentage was? I was gonna say 40%. I don't know if I even said anything.
So. You didn't, but sometimes when you don't say that, it's purposeful, and you don't like when I push back and be like, actually say something. So I was just gonna let it go. Dean, go ahead.
You Steve Von Horned me.
Okay, I'm gonna go with 30% during the off season and 75% until the trade deadline.
Whoa. So you think expiring contracts are going to all of a sudden have more value?
No, I think that the Bucks are going to try to move him.
Okay.
I think that I don't think they're going to re-sign him. I think that they're going to explore options to find someone more starry. And I think that they're going to bet on Brogdon and Delly and, I don't know, DiVincenzo to hold the team as they explore those options. I don't think that they're going to be re-signing him next year, so they might have placeholder point guards until they find someone they like. But I just don't see him being, you know, until the end of the season with the Bucks.
Okay.
And I think one thing I think to add, you know, again, not that next summer is some, like, you know, you're going to go out and find some super, you know, I mean, I have no expectation the Bucks are going to sign Kemba Walker next summer, right? I mean, you know, cap wise, it's hard because you're, you know, obviously you're trying to keep Middleton. And even if, you know, you have Brogdon on his really cheap cap hold, you know, even if you don't add any money this summer, you know, your cap space, it's not like you have a max slot now. You know, could you have a $15 million slot, something on that order? Could you open up even more if you, for instance, like, you know, stretch Tencent or something like that? Yeah, you could open up more flexibility if you did that. But, you know, in that sense, just letting Bledsoe expire, that's the trade-off, right? Is if there's flexibility, you know, if you don't sign Jabari or anyone else to really long-term salary this summer, then I think that's part of the calculus for Bledsoe is, you know, that in that case, Bledsoe walking, actually, you could have roughly the amount of money he made this year turning into cap space next year, more or less. And so that's sort of an interesting question I think the Bucks have to figure out as well. You know, obviously, you want to get something for him if you can, but even opening up his salary slot and potentially having some cap flexibility, again, that could be also of more use than just trying to trade for, you know, any point guard or whatever that would have a longer term deal.
All right. I think we've covered everything I wanted to in free agency. Anything that I missed or you guys want to hit on?
I'm good.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you guys think are the odds of them trading either Dellavedova or Henson this summer? I mean, we know they're available.
There's
actually,
like, do you think 2%?
Okay. Well, Henson, for either, or do you think one is more movable than the other?
Delly is more movable, but I don't think that any team is going to be willing to take them on without substantial assets from the Bucks part.
Yeah, I would say something similar. I think it's still going to take adding some pretty significant sweetener to any deal for someone to take those contracts on. So I would say low, maybe 3%, but that's about where I'd be.
I think there's basically no chance they salary dump them. So I would agree in that sense. I think the odds of, like, a, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic type trade where you're just swapping, you know, one of them, like if Bud just doesn't like Delly or whatever and feels like he has enough guys.
How dare he? He's gritty and he tries hard.
But I mean, like, especially if you're like letting Jabari walk, like, is there like a 3-4 type guy that you'd rather have than Delly, who's also overpaid? I don't know who that would be. It was kind of interesting in the offseason mock, the Dunked On mock, they talked about, I forget who it was. They were talking about Henson, something like Henson for Evan Fournier in Orlando, just because he's owed more money over more years.
I would be all the way in on that.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting to me, because Fournier is actually like a very good player. And I think whether he's coming off the bench or starting in Snell's place, that gives you a fair bit more firepower that actually is pretty interesting. And yeah, he's not got a great salary. But again, like, you know, fundamentally, you need good players. And if you turn John Henson into a good player, and then on the wing, and then you often basically replace John Henson for very little money because the center market is so depressed, that would obviously be very nice. So I don't know. We'll see if John Henson, I mean, I feel like John Hammond kind of owes us that, right? To take back John Henson after he gave him all that money.
I have a deal that I think, from the numbers that I recall, works. The Magic sent DJ Augustin never put it to the Bucks.
Yes.
And the Bucks get send Henson and Bledsoe.
Hmm.
Do you do that?
Well, that's actually interesting, because that's actually a pretty effective salary dump for the Magic, right? So if the Magic are trying to just open up salary, then that actually becomes pretty interesting. Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm in. I mean, I don't even think I needed to say I'm in. Of course I'm in.
Well, yeah.
But
you'd add multiple first-round picks to get
DJ Augustin. DJ is my guy, so, you know, I got to. Okay, I think that's it. I think we just went through the Bucks offseason. You know, there were some ups and downs in this podcast. Hopefully you guys all enjoyed it. Dean, thank you so much for joining us and for, you know, making jokes and having some fun. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. For Frank, for Dean, and for Eric, this has been Locked On Bucks. We will talk to you after free agency starts. Oh, my gosh. That's so crazy. That's happening on Sunday. We'll talk to you after all of that. See you guys after that. Have a good weekend.